Just in time for summer, the folks at Epic Brewing have released a new canned cocktail, the Utah Margarita. A delicious blend of real lime and agave, the Utah Margarita is ready to drink by the river or in the park. And here's the kicker, no need to buy it at a liquor store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or visit Epic Brewing on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. Utah's annual legislative session is over. In 45 days, our lawmakers passed 591 bills and a $29 billion budget. So we are breaking down how it all impacts your life over two episodes with Fox 13's Ben Winslow. In part one, we covered sports, the Great Salt Lake, and calendars. Today is part two, housing, bars and restaurants, and air quality. It's Wednesday, March 6th. I'm Allie Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Ben Winslow, Fox 13 Capitol Hill reporter. Welcome back again for part two of our legislative recap. Let's start with housing and homelessness. Governor Spencer Cox had big plans for housing and homelessness this session, including a focus on building more starter homes. He wanted the state to see 35,000 new starter homes by 2028. How did the legislature respond to that priority?
Meh.
Okay.
Really, they did.
But it's not personal.
Yeah, they passed a lot of policy that the governor is largely happy with, because I interviewed him on the last night of the session, and he overall felt pretty good about it. He felt like that a lot of the bills that they did pass really opened the door for development, for to get those starter homes going, to get the funding. A lot of the bills that passed were very wonky in that they reworked zoning type things and approvals and all of that stuff to get the ball rolling. And the funding, it really wasn't great. Like, you know, he wanted hundreds of millions of dollars for housing and homelessness. He didn't get nearly that amount. In fact, on the last week of the session, there was a lot of pressure on legislative budget leaders to come up, look under the couch cushions, find whatever money you can to make this happen, because homelessness didn't get anything. And it's a big priority for the governor, and it's a big problem. They passed some significant bills on homelessness. They raised the threshold for code blues to be declared by raising it a few degrees. That's a good bill because that ensures that there is emergency shelters for people. People aren't out on the streets. They passed a lot more requirements dealing with homelessness. You know, a lot of things to just kind of ensure that there's systems in place, but the money is where it was at. They did finally come up with like $75 to $80 million for homelessness. The governor wanted well over $100 million.
He wanted $193 million,
yeah,
right?
It was a lot.
Almost 200, yeah.
And the budget people felt just really like stretched. There were so many priorities, so many things that people wanted. It felt like a year when it comes to the budget, everybody got some of what they want, but nobody got everything of what they wanted. Like you think about childcare, that just didn't get anything.
But we did have a tax cut.
They did have a tax cut, yes. They passed a small tax cut, but legislative leaders argue that's economic stimulus because this goes in line with year after year after year of tax cuts to provide relief in the face of inflation for families. $67 if you make upwards between $60,000 to $100,000. That's about how much you get, according to one analysis. But when it came to housing and homelessness, they did find some creative ways to get some money and to try to help out the situation, one of which is they dipped into alcohol. When you, as a liquor consumer, go to a state-run liquor store, you will have the option to round up your sales tax to the nearest dollar to contribute to the Pamela Atkinson Homeless Trust Fund.
Okay. That's the same one that it asked me to contribute to when I filed my taxes,
exactly,
right?
And the money is earmarked for substance abuse treatment and homeless services. That's one way that they found, but that didn't require a fiscal note because it's just a change in policy. So it was one way that they could try to kick some more money in the future, you know, relying on the generosity of Utahns. Would you like to round up your sales tax to the nearest dollar to help homeless people? And I think a lot of people will go, yeah, sure, fine.
So the legislature said, you pay for it, members of the public.
Well, they also found money, though they did find their own money. Okay. One of the big things is they did fund a $25 million low barrier shelter, which is significant because that's the shelters with the least amount of rules, so you can get people off the streets right away. You know, it doesn't have such criteria. You've heard that sometimes about complaints about difficulty of getting people into shelters because of some of the rules. This is one way of doing that. The governor said it's a start. We can get going with some of these initiatives we need to accomplish. He left feeling pretty good about it when I talked to him on the last night of the session.
Where does that low barrier shelter go? Is this like, am I understanding correctly? This is $25 million for a single new location. Location TBD?
Possibly. I'm not sure. And location TBD, mostly because I haven't read it all the way through to figure out where everything goes.
Well, it's probably 180 pages.
I was tracking 832 bills the last week of the session. So, you know, I'm sorry. There are some things that get by me.
Well, I mean, certainly housing and homelessness is a conversation that we're just, it seems like we're going to be having forever. So you brought up that we might be funding some of these services by rounding up our bill at the state liquor store. Of course, we're about to get a brand new one on 300 South. Our bill at the state liquor store is already pretty high because it feels like we're pretty heavily taxed on booze. Every year we get what's called an omnibus bill on liquor, which is basically when they kind of roll all of liquor policy into one. What changes did we get this year?
We get a lot, and you get a sin tax, Utah. Congratulations.
Wait, what's that?
A sin tax is a term that I use to describe when you raise the taxes on alcohol. It's an excise tax. So it's a tax on goods and services, but when you put it on a vice, it effectively is taxing, you know, your sins. So there are things that happen in the omnibus alcohol bill every year. It is an annual joy and treat. I said not so sarcastically. but it is what you're going to get is, yes, there will be more bar and restaurant licenses. There will be a lot more over the next 7 years. It'll be graduated to where the sponsor, Representative Jefferson Burton, argued that this gives some flexibility to them to determine, like, do we need more? Do we need less? Should we, you know, be able to just move around a little bit so that they don't have to fight every single year? So there's going to be a tiered number of bar and restaurant licenses. They want to end the shortage because, you know, we've seen through the Department of Alcoholic Beverage Services Commission, every year people come and they want their license. They're planning to open a business. They have to invest a lot of money. They have to already hire staff. They have to have basically a turnkey operation to go with no guarantee of a license. And it is absolutely heartbreaking to watch people, you know, having to dip into savings, having to sell things to try to just make it another month in the hopes that maybe there's a license and maybe the commission can grant them. And the commission has been kind of throwing it in the legislature's face. At these meetings, when they deny a license, they're like, hey, we would love for you to contact your lawmaker and tell them exactly how much you don't like this. It's been an interesting thing to watch government turn on government. But they get a front row seat to watching, you know, people having to do these things in order to try to start a business. And, you know, we're supposedly a business-friendly state. So this part of the bill was to fix that, to make sure that there was licenses available for people who wanted it so we didn't have to create this problem. But where the legislature giveth, the legislature taketh away.
I was going to say, what's the trade-off, Ben? I can feel it coming.
Liquor prices will go up. Cost plus 88% is what it is sold at right now. We will now have it at cost plus 88.5%. We will also have a tax on beer by the barrel. This means that over the next 4 years, it'll rise to $1 a barrel. Money from liquor sales, I should point out, pays for a lot of essential other government services that we use. It pays for things like public safety, school lunches for needy children, now homelessness services, and the general fund. It is a $500 million agency, the Department of Alcoholic Beverage Services. It generates a lot of money for the general fund, and certainly lawmakers on Capitol Hill argue that's why taxes overall are lower, because a lot of these things pay for these essential services that, you know, we would have to raise things like property taxes, sales taxes, et cetera. to cover. So there's certainly trade-offs, and that's one thing you get. Another big thing that you get out of the alcohol bill, Everclear is banned.
No!
Anything over 80% alcohol by volume is prohibited in Utah. The sponsor says that we've had incidents of alcohol poisoning. It is just such a heavy substance. They will not allow it to be sold. From what I understand, though, there may be a workaround on that. Everclear does produce a lower proof version that could probably meet state code. Apparently, California sells a more diluted version of Everclear than Utah. I found that out while researching.
Okay, but no one's buying no one's buying Everclear because it's delicious, Ben.
No, I know. It's a mixer. I know that you use it, you know, for these drinks that just get you royally trashed really quickly.
Yeah.
But there is apparently a lower volume version that is sold in other states than Utah. So that's another thing that's in the bill that takes care of that. There was a provision about hotel portability. Like, you can basically take your drink from the hotel bar to your room as long as it's in an opaque cup. Those are some of the highlights. As always, booze is big business in Utah, and there is certainly a lot in that bill that does a lot. Overall, people left feeling largely okay with the bill. I know that beer wholesalers are not thrilled about the tax increase because they said that it will ultimately be passed on to consumers.
There was talk about more enforcement, like in addition to the extra 100-something licenses over the next 7 years, there would be more enforcement. There was talk about mimicking a program, I think, that's active in Minnesota.
Oh, point of last drink. Yes.
Point of last drink program.
It is.
Did that get through?
Yes. And more enforcement, they did fund 3 new officers just to keep up with all the bars and restaurants. They do have to be inspected on a regular basis. You do need people to go and, you know, enforce complaints or check compliance, things like that. It's a big job. And point of last drink is an interesting initiative. Because it's a way of tracking and finding out if there's problem spots and where people are drinking. And so this is, if you are pulled over in a DUI stop, an officer will now be required to ask you, where did you drink last? And you are under no obligation to answer, as is your constitutional right. However, the data that is used can oftentimes be used to track if there's like a problem bar that may be over-serving, that, you know, that DABS can go to them and say, hey, we've got a lot of complaints coming in about, or people that we've picked up that have said that you've, you know, been over-serving, and so they can address that with that individual's place. You could also find out just where people are, if people are drinking at parties or home or whatever, and maybe you put more resources into, say, a public awareness campaign. You know, just reminding people don't drink and drive and reminding people, you know, and you can target it toward that specific area of problem.
Is there evidence that this works?
They're at least willing to try it. Whether there's evidence that it works, I don't know. I haven't looked into the other states that have tried this and seen if it's helpful, but they certainly view it as no harm in trying.
Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita, a delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave. And they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a 6-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's. Or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. Okay, something else that happened in this city during the legislative session that's huge is that Utah officially submitted its preferred host application for the 2034 Winter Olympics. Again, we are gaga for sports. But an interesting part of that agreement requires the city to have clean air when the games come in 2034. What kind of progress on air quality was made this session?
None. None at all.
Okay.
We can move
on. Next question.
Yeah, exactly. No, there were bills that were introduced. They just didn't get anywhere in the face of so many other issues. Republican legislative leaders argue that we are making progress on air quality. The data is showing that air quality is improving. But those bills that set metrics, and they were run by Republicans. These weren't just Democrat bills. There were both, but they just didn't get anywhere. And they're not going away. Those bills will probably take on greater urgency the closer we get, especially if we are awarded an Olympics. But, you know, there's certainly agreements and things that they're working on the last night of the session. When asked about air quality and the lack of progress, the Senate president did announce that there was an agreement with Union Pacific to switch the switcher trains, which are very, very polluting, particularly on the west side of the city, to get those to switch out from these very polluting ones to tier four fuels, which are much cleaner. You know, and this, of course, goes to toward the Inland Port project and all the criticisms there, trying to make it more environmentally friendly. But yeah, a lot of the air quality bills just didn't get anywhere. They just didn't get any traction. And some of the groups that deal with air quality, you know, were a little frustrated with a lot of these things. But, you know, they're not giving up. They said they'll try again next year.
It's weird because energy policy was a big theme this session. And we saw two kind of big bills related to extraction, mining, and coal. We're hearing from activists and scientists that, you know, it feels like Utah's no longer an all of the above energy production state. We are coal first. Like, we're kind of going hard on coal in a way that it feels like the rest of the country and the world maybe isn't. Are we going to see more mining in this state?
I think that remains to be seen, and there's certainly market forces that will dictate that far beyond what the legislature would like. And the bills that did pass did make us, at least on paper, an all of the above energy state. But there were bills that also sort of put more scrutiny on utilities' plans to retire fossil fuel facilities, coal plants. A lot of these bills do try to prop up coal by making it harder to retire plants that are fading, including one that potentially sets the stage for a state takeover of the Intermountain Power Project, which is a massive, massive facility in central Utah. Intermountain Power Project is controversial because it generates about 93% of its electricity for California. And the rest of it is for Utah. Some of the early agreements called for it to use Utah coal. Obviously, the facilities changed. Generations have gone by and things are, you know, changing in terms of its energy portfolio in the state. You know, it has been legislators have been very unhappy with how things have gone in that direction. So this sort of sets that stage, and it could potentially wind up in litigation, which will be pretty nasty. What was really interesting in the energy bills for me is to hear lawmakers from across the state utter the words nuclear power, particularly Southern Utah lawmakers, where that has been a dirty word for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And now they're looking toward it because there's a lot of potential with these small-scale nuclear projects. Even the legislature acknowledges, though, that the technology is still a little new. So they're gonna, you know, wait and see. But it was just interesting to hear that approach, that they're willing to look and consider nuclear power in the past when that was a hard no on Capitol Hill. But the Senate president told me on the last night of the session that he does believe that they will get to renewables, but they want to maintain lower cost energy. We are the lowest cost rate paying state in the nation, at least according to one report. That's been a big drumbeat that they've put out there when it comes to energy is dispatchable and dedicated, that when you turn on the lights, you don't have the potential or fear of brownouts or of rolling blackouts or things like that. And that that's why they defend sort of this move to ensure that a dedicated and dispatchable energy supply like fossil fuels versus renewables, which they say are a little more hit and miss on certain things. But the Senate president remains committed that they will get to renewables. They just want to do it in this sort of graduated step. At least that's how he defended these pieces of legislation.
Okay. So then is it fair to say that we taxpayers will be paying more in energy to kind of keep coal in business?
Well, that's what critics certainly say, is that, you know, the flip side of all these bills is that people ultimately will pay more. You know, I'm not entirely sure because I'm not really an expert on energy policy here, but stay tuned. Watch the Public Service Commission, which is the group that regulates utility rates, and see what they have to do to comply with these laws, because this is going to be interesting to see what it means for consumers ultimately.
Okay, let's end with education. And it feels right to end there because despite the fact that the widely repeated stat that our per pupil funding in the state is near the bottom nationally, Education is the biggest slice of our state budget. The Utah legislature tackled more than 100 bills related to classrooms. That's what, like an eighth of everything they took up this session. What were the biggest ones?
There was a lot. And I'd argue the biggest ones were probably the funding, the budget, because, you know, there's a lot of money that is going to go toward classrooms, towards teachers, to help families. The WPU, the weighted pupil unit, is the formula that's used for class sizes, and it can be used toward, to go toward teacher salaries. That got increased. There was a lot more money earmarked. Student teachers. This was something I did not know until this year. And my sister is a teacher, so I didn't even know this. But student teachers work for free while they're earning their certification. You have to work pretty much a full-time job, and you don't get paid for it. This year, Representative Karen Peterson ran a bill, and she managed to get them some money so that they no longer work for free. That's pretty big. Representative Kara Berkland ran a bill to give more money to teachers so that they didn't have to dip into their own pocketbooks to pay for classroom supplies. You know, you hear about that all the time. There was a bill that eliminated school fees by Representative Mark Strong, and that they already did it for elementary schools. These general fees that when you register your kid for school and then you find yourself hit with hundreds of dollars in fees. This doesn't say that, you know, if you buy certain classroom supplies, like, you know, art supplies or science, you know, chemicals and things like that, that you won't still get a fee on that. And extracurriculars, they're hands off. If your kid's doing an extracurricular, you're on your own. They did waive it for secondary schools too this year. So, you know, that's just a little more of an easing of a burden on families. There were a lot of bills like that that really helped with education. Now, all of this, of course, is designed to also try to help to get you, the voter, to pass a proposed constitutional amendment this November. And that is an interesting piece of tax policy that was sort of overarching on the session whenever we would talk about education policy. So right now, the income tax is earmarked for education and a little bit of social services. What they want to do is to allow, they want the voters to amend the Constitution to allow to dip into the income tax for other needs too. You know, any other general budget need once education is sort of taken care of. In exchange for that, the legislature is offering to eliminate the state portion of the sales tax on food, which is something that's very popular.
Oh, so it's back.
Yeah.
It's back. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep, I remember this from last legislative session.
Yeah, it passed last legislative session. It is on the ballot this November. And I would argue that is why a lot of your other proposed constitutional amendments died this year. Legislative leaders certainly expressed some concerns, at least privately, that voters, and a little bit publicly, but that voters would have a backlash on if there's too many proposed constitutional amendments on the ballot, you just finally go, no, 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 no. I hate it. I hate you. Go away. Mm-hmm. I want this done. Get off my ballot. They decided to scale back on the proposed constitutional amendments. Mm-hmm. But this earmark is going to go before voters. And the X factor on that one remains the teachers' unions, because that is the one group that could probably really make that very, very difficult in that. If they choose to actively oppose it, you know, a lot of voters will sit up and take notice and listen. And so TBD on that proposed constitutional amendment, but that's what it does. And legislative leaders argue that this is good for budget stability so that, you know, you no longer have to have these whiplashes of, you know, oh, we got to cut services here because it's a lean budget year, or we got to tighten the belt here because, you know, we just don't have the money. That this is more stable than the sales tax, which kind of just goes up and down and up and down and up and down based upon, you know, consumers' whims. And then, of course, removing the sales tax on food is very, very popular. Far and away, Utahns love that.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a trade-off. And it's going to be one that, you know, to watch to see how voters react, how voters feel about this trade-off, and who lines up to support it and who does not.
It feels very cleverly and a little cynically manufactured to me as a voter to have to choose between those two things. But I guess
you're going to make that choice. You have to make that choice. That's right now what is before you.
Okay. Last question on education. Last year, we saw the establishment of this school voucher program, the Utah Fits All Scholarship Program, which basically says if you as a family decide that you want to go to private school instead of public school, you're eligible for up to $8,000 to help fund your private education. Basically, in theory, like the money you've paid into taxes to fund education, you're entitled to somewhat if you're going to the private school system. Very controversial. largely unpopular with educators, specifically public school educators. But I know that there were members of the legislature asking for even more money to fund that program this year. Did they get that?
No, they did not.
No.
This was a very lean budget year again, where everybody got some of what they wanted, but nobody got all of what they wanted when it came to budget. They had sought $150 million more this year. The program hadn't even got off the ground.
That's how much the governor asked basically for housing and homelessness.
Yeah, and then the Appropriations Committee that decides or, you know, kind of recommends to another committee called the Executive Appropriations Committee. There's a lot of committees in government.
So it'll
make your head spin. But they had recommended only $50 million go to this program. In the end, the all-powerful Executive Appropriations Committee, which is the committee that sets the budget and is made up of legislative leadership, they had decided that they would give $40 million. So that's where it ended up. As Jerry Stevenson, the senator from Layton, who is the budget chair for the Senate, said, it is a socks and underwear kind of year. And that's a joke that he makes when it refers to the kind of year where you don't have a lot of money for Christmas gifts, so you give people socks and underwear as gifts because it's what you need and not what you get or what you want. So
That's
the tale of the budget this year. And that really speaks to, you know, when you talk about other priorities like homelessness and housing, things that the governor wanted, you get some of what you need, not all of what you want.
You get socks and underwear in your stocking, but mom and dad are going to enjoy a tax cut.
They say that's economic stimulus to be able to afford that socks and underwear. And, you know, maybe some Fruit Loops instead of the, you know, the generic brand of Cheerios or something.
That's right. Not the generic Captain Crunch that cut the roof of your mouth up. You know what they do say, Ben Winslow, and by they I mean you, is that all roads lead to the Capitol. It's my favorite thing that you say. It's so true. We experience it so fully here in Salt Lake City. Thank you, Ben Winslow, Fox 13 reporter, for breaking all of this down for us. Sign die. Enjoy your vacation.
Sign and die. Die.
That is all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. We will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city. Bye.